What was the relationship like with your dad? This podcast, Military Veteran Dad, is brought to you by the Business of Fatherhood, an effort by me to help you become a better dad. By helping dads create a lasting feeling of change on the inside, help them grow through generational trauma, and by redefining the definition of living. There is more to life than being alive. To find out more information about this, head on over to bencloy.com or check out the Business of Fatherhood podcast on any and all platforms.
Dory 1, this is Fire Team Delta. Dad's coming home.
Welcome to the Military Veteran Dad Podcast, where it is our mission to bring every dad home. I am your host, Ben Cloy. I'm a United States Marine veteran, husband, and a father. We will bring authentic conversations to inspire action in your life so we can close the gap between the dad you are today and the dad you want to be tomorrow. This is the Military Veteran Dad Podcast.
Hey guys, welcome back to Military Veteran Dad. This is episode 162, and I got one question for you before we get started. Why do seagulls hang out by the sea? Wait for it. Because if they hung out by the bay, they would be bagels. You're welcome. Thank you. I am still getting street tread with that with my kids and a few other people that I've shared it with. Today's episode, it's going to be a good one. Before we get there, though, it's been a hot minute since we've done an interview show. They're coming back for the month of May, but I'm going to turn them off for the summertime. So I'm actually planning two types of series coming up, one for June and one for July. I'm doing this for a couple different reasons. One, to preach and do what I actually preach about slowing down a little bit during the summer. Interview shows take a lot of effort to keep going throughout the show out the summer when the kids are in school and summer school. And I just want to enjoy the summer because it's been a long winter. Second, I feel that the impact I've already had on the first deployment series we did is already making an impact. And so I want to kind of summarize and actually maybe shift. Instead of adding more content to the podcast, I want to bring and kind of tie some of these things with a nice bow and put some of the content, the lessons learned for the military, because there's a lot of content spread out of all over these episodes. And so this allows me to take it, maneuver it, tie it up, wrist twist it, do a few wordsmithing exercises and bring it to you in a nice compartmentalized lesson that then you don't have to go back and listen to all 162 episodes. So look forward to those coming up this summer. Now that we got that out of the way, I got kind of a gut-wrenching question, but also a statement that I just recently learned, and it tied into when I was prepping to release this interview. And it means essentially this, or the question goes like this: to decide is one of the most difficult choices. Why are you avoiding deciding? Think about it. Here's what I learned. To decide means one choice has to die. Because I recently learned that we avoid making those decisions because to decide means that one choice has to die. That one word decide has the word I'd in it. I-D-E. And similar words like genocide and suicide mean death. That this word decide is almost a distant cousin of these horrible words of genocide and suicide. But because they end in the word I'd, they have this relationship to death, that to decide actually means that one path is no longer there and I have to commit to this other path, and that one choice has to die. I tell you that story because in this interview, part of John Spencer's story that I'm getting ready to introduce here is he talked about his retirement in a way that I've never had talked about in the 162 episodes of Military Veteran Dad, and that his retirement felt more like a funeral. And it was a sad process that he didn't really want to partake in because it was this idea of going to it and going through it was more like visiting his funeral than celebrating who he was. And so I won't go into too much of that, but there's your little teaser. Today, I am talking with John Spencer, who is now retired from the Army after 25 years. John and his wife met in combat in Iraq in 2009. They were a dual military family for almost 8 years. His story and his recent book that's coming out, take a link in the show notes, connect on Amazon for that pre-order, Connected Soldier, are filled with depths of stories of struggle, triumph, and getting through it. This man has been there. He's done it. He has the stories. He's been through it. And people listen to what this man has to say. He still works for the Army with the Urban Warfare Center. And his ideas and impact is still leaving a legacy within the military, even today on the other side of transition. So without further ado, let's get started with John Spencer. And as always, as tradition, if you want to hear my big takeaway of this episode, hang on to the other side. Welcome to the podcast, John.
Hey, thanks for having me, man.
Well, if it's anything like the pre-stories that we were doing before we hit record, this interview is going to have some interesting stories that we've never had on the podcast. And one of them like is going to be like a really good story on what I didn't hint, but I'm going to let it out now, is a great story on pain to purpose. Like there's one moment on these podcast episodes that I'm always trying to think through in my head. And there's, and it's, I mean, this is the epitome of veteran transition, is realizing and understanding how life is happening for you and not to you. Would you say that that's been one of your major lessons that you've articulated through your life, John?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I had a long military career and I had some great opportunities, but I mean, of course you face these moments of adversity and you come out, no matter what, you come out different, you come out stronger. And I'm a big believer in things happen for a reason. So I have, you know, crazy stories, and that was the benefit of being in the military. I have stories that some people will never have. And I love sharing those with people, actually, whether it's my gym or my kids who, you know, pull a chair up and listen to dad.
When you went into the Army, what were you looking for?
So, I mean, it's hard to look back that far, right? So it's been, you know, 28 years or so. I was a 17-year-old kid coming out of high school in a small town in Indiana. I'd watched the videos in my recruiter's office about Special Forces and Rangers. I mean, I really knew that I came from and it's not stereotypical of everybody, but I came from a poor family. I knew that college wasn't an option. I was looking for something else. You could say I was looking for adventure. I was pretty young though. And it wasn't long days in my first duty assignment to Panama coming out of Indiana that I got whether I thought I was going to get or not, I got the adventure.
Was there anything that you would say you were running from? Because that's often also a common theme of joining the Army, of like, you know what, there's this dumpster fire that I keep running into called life and I don't like it. I'm going to try to find a place where it's kind of issued to me and I don't have to worry about it.
I mean, I guess it was a little bit of that. So my dad left when I was a little kid, which did impact me. And my mom raised three kids, working three jobs, barely ever saw her. I knew I wanted something else. I wanted a different type of life. And you know, there is a circle to small town, and my sister really gets on me if I say that in interviews at all, like what you know, because she almost thinks I say Indiana like it's a bad thing. But I wanted something else based on what I had seen up to that point in my life. I wasn't sure what it was, but I had no idea what the military would give me, and openness to the world, travel to other walks of life. You recruiters sell you a bunch of stuff, but I really didn't know. And I tell people I was re-raised in the military, to be honest, from how to talk to people, how to get respect, how to earn respect, how to eat right. I was looking for something different, and I definitely got that.
It reminds me of something from my life where essentially like you're going into the military and you go into it with this basic idea of like, you know what, I want something, but I don't really know what it is. But it also speaks to the one thing that really screws us over on the transition out is width. Like, depending on what your military experience was and depending on how active you were, whether you hung out in your barracks room playing Xbox or whether you were out there exploring the world, wherever the world was, then you were assigned, we don't add width to our life. And it's that width that, I mean, military is one of the most common options. Like you got college and military as your two primary choices out of high school. And it's a two-lane road and you only get to go on one of those. But then when you join the military and you pick one, much more than college, you have an ability to see the world, interact with the world, get connected to people and work with people that you know, and even just different ethnicities and different backgrounds. That width is so important that, and I didn't know this as well going in, and most enlisted go in for just to get in there, get a paycheck, do their thing. And our real Achilles heel that I found was we don't spend time kind of realizing that the transition starts on day one. Like the very first day in boot camp, you begin to see the world differently. And every day you get a little bit more of the puzzle that could be your future life. But we really don't start paying attention until 3 months out when it's ready to EAS. And we're like, ugh, that wouldn't buy fast. Now I got to get back to figuring out to grow up again. And did you struggle with that in kind of figuring out, like, I got with, but did you figure out, like, as you were going, or maybe another way to say it, were you consciously paying attention to that with, or was it just more considered what you considered life?
Yeah. So I think in the beginning, I just rode the wave through what the Army was telling me to do. It's only through reflection. And, you know, this is why I wrote my book, Connected Soldiers, was, I mean, there's a lot of reflection now, what I was experiencing, but at the moment, you know, you're flooded with life and you don't know it. But I think I was, from the day I decided to join until in my transition to stay in, right? Because we make these decisions, you know, and then the decision to get out. It was always, for me, a search for meaning, and I didn't even know it. So I was searching for a meaning in my life. I didn't see what was next after high school. So I was searching. And I think that realm of, you know, Man's Search for Meaning, which is a really good book. But I think about it a lot now, especially when I was going into transition identity. I mean, what am I if I'm not a soldier? Was a question I asked myself a lot as I was making the decision, basically for my family to, hey, this is, you know, it's just not what I want in my life at the moment. And my wife's active duty. So, you know, at one point we had to take, you know, basically make a decision on whose career was going to take it. So I think in the beginning I was searching for something, and the Army gave me that and put me on a path to it gives you meaning and purpose to, you know, whether what you're moving forward towards. And now in reflection, I understand I was searching for some type of identity. And I have many identities now, you know, dad being number one. But even back then as a 17-year-old kid, you know, once I created an identity to be a soldier, it became a part of me. And as I transitioned, it was how to deal with, that's still a part of me. And I can have multiple identities. I don't have to have just one. But that's what I think it gave me looking back now.
So you talked about it, and I want to go back and I want to unpack and spend a little bit of time here, because I see it the most with Marines, because they issue us this everlasting gobstops, or called being a Marine, that never goes away. You're going to be insulted when someone says you're a former Marine. And it's this identity that you get to put on a uniform and actually feel it and look it. And then at one point they take it away, and a Marine has to answer the question, who am I now without this uniform? And that, to me, is one of the biggest tripwires we don't even see coming, is who am I when I take this off? And if you did come from something that you were running from, the military does a great job issuing you this identity. And they don't do a good job on filling in the blank when you take it off. And they don't even probably really consciously even know when they take it off. Like, you know what? We didn't do a good job helping this man understand, like, who he can become and who he is without this uniform. So take me to some of the, maybe the hard questions, some of the low points, because you probably had a lot of bad days where you're like, I'm so tired, which tired is a word that we often use when we're fighting ourselves in our mind. Like, I'm just tired of not knowing that answer. So can you dive deeper into that journey to identify that?
Yeah, I can try. I mean, it's so hard. I mean, I still struggle with it today, right? The core of our identity changes so much. I agree with you. And the Army tried to go to Soldier for Life program, but the Marine Corps has it so ingrained in who you guys are, that once a Marine, always a Marine. And what that gives you guys,
it's not a program for Marines. It's like, it's a way of life. And that's maybe the primary, like the reason why Soldier for Life may have a longer kick in the, to get it held together. Cause it's extra when Marines, it's like, no, that's what we started with.
Yeah. And you earn it. So, I mean, to go through the struggle, I coach had struggles. Like, so once I was a part of an organization called the Ranger Regiment, and I got my ear bitten off in a fight, and that meant that I could no longer be in that organization. But based on the way that the organization had designed itself, to where you had to fight every day to be in it, it became a significant part of my identity to be a Ranger in the Ranger Regiment. So once I got my ear bitten off, and because I had a medical profile, I had to leave. And it was probably one of the lowest points of my life. And it's so weird, the psychology on why it was. I was still in the Army. I was still getting paid. I was still a soldier, but not being able to be a part of that organization, like, sent me into like almost depression. I was in a really bad state of mind, and it took some time to be opened up to go on to another organization. But that organization, the Ranger Regiment, had built up the esprit de corps and what it meant to be a part of the organization so high. And the fact that everybody had to fight. So it was a kind of a moment in my life. And later in reflection, I'm like, why did I feel so strongly about it? And why did I struggle so much to get out of it? Sebastian Younger wrote a really good book called Tribe, which kind of relates our feelings about that, being a part of a tribe, being a part of a community. And then once you get out of that and try to fit into some other type of community, how hard that is. And I've struggled with that. And I really, my wife knows this. I almost wouldn't let her celebrate my retirement because it felt more like a funeral than it did something to celebrate, because I was making the soldier part of my identity a smaller part of my identity. Although nobody will ever take that away from me, but I told her like, this is not a happy day for me. And she didn't understand, although she was great and helpful for me in that transition. Human, we want a meaning, a purpose in our life. So in these giant transitions, whether it was my leaving the Ranger Regiment because of an episode, that I had to figure out that transition, and there wasn't really nobody that could help me. If I could go back and talk to myself back then, I would explain to myself about these different, holding these different identities within myself. And if I overcommit to one, how much that sets me up to be weaker, to be strength in my own terms. And if I can identify with multiple identities, because we all, whether we're part of our local community or whether we're, I find strength in my CrossFit gym, even though I rebelled against CrossFit my entire military career because I thought it was faddish. I just didn't understand that it's actually about community. So I bond with the people in my class every day I go. It's not so much about the funny looking exercises. It's just about the fact that I'm bonding, and that's really human nature. So part of my identity is I'm a part of that gym and everything it means to be a part of that gym. And that's not to trivialize the military service, but we as social beings have to have this aspect of community. The military gives us the strongest form of that, right? The brotherhood. But there are other forms, and from my transition to being a single guy for much of my career to being a father, how that became my sole purpose in life as my number one identity. Didn't mean I wasn't a soldier anymore. Didn't mean I wasn't a author, a writer, whatever, but it became my primary identity. And I haven't read a book that kind of breaks it down like that. Like you can hold all these identities in, but which one's your primary one? If it's something that you no longer is a primary for whatever reason, then you have to transition to making a primary identity your kind of your priority, while keeping the other identities. I know that sounds really vague now that I'm saying it, but holding these other identities in together.
Two things that really hit me is I've never, in all these interviews, no one's ever described the retirement like a funeral. And I can only imagine you listening out here, listening to him say that and being like, that just probably kicked you in the nuts. Because what I've also learned when interviews like this happen and you say things like you just did, John, you give vocabulary to a feeling that most people don't know. And then once you do, it's like you feel it for the first time. And what I also was thinking when you were talking about all these identities, what we use as a mechanism, and the military rewards us for this, is our identity shields us from those things that we don't want to process yet too. So it's almost like, which identity is strong enough to hide whatever I don't want to acknowledge? And I also have always kind of, when I'm always talking to a dad or when I'm coaching a dad, I'm kind of always looking for those lessons or that truth that life has been trying to teach them over and over and over. Like if God was vindictive and he's like, you know what, I wonder if I can get him today. And then sure as shit, he gets you. And it's like, man, he still hasn't learned that lesson. To me, those are the lessons that like our identity is trying to hide, or the vulnerabilities within that lesson that we don't want to admit to ourselves, or that truth. And I think that's the crux of the question when we think about who we are. is our identity is tied to these protection mechanisms versus, maybe this is also language to add to this conversation, who I am is an expression, not something that I do. And who you want to express yourself as, like as a dad, that's joy, that's exciting, that's adventure, that's fun. That is more of who you are and who you can become. And it's less about a label of this man is an electrical engineer. Now, that's a label, that's a suit that you can put on, but it's very, I mean, you can express being a logical engineer, but we don't use that vocabulary, and it's often even very dry within that category. So you're not going to find more success with those types of labels.
Yeah, amen to that. And as a father, I know that my kids don't really care what the label is. They care that I'm present as a dad, and I'm giving them the things that I think the universal, one of the other universal things I've learned in my travels of the world is that there's a universal human aspect of wanting your kids to have better than you did, for them to have more, to experience life differently, the richness of it. So I prioritize that so much in my life about giving them experiences, and they don't care that I'm an author or even as a soldier, although we teach them, you know, putting your hand over your heart and things like that, like virtues and values that we learned as soldiers, me and my wife, but they don't care about the label. They care about who you are every day and what you do, to be honest. But I think you word, I mean, that's amazing how you worded it, for sure.
There's one other little wordsmith I'll give you on, because people often say I want my kids to have a better life, but there was a lesson I learned from when Tom Brokaw wrote The Greatest Generation. And he was talking about, and two people of the Greatest Generation, that they were thinking like, what's the one thing? Well, what's the one thing they wish they didn't have? It was like, man, I wish my kids had better than the Great Depression, which isn't fairly easy. I mean, it's a fairly easy thing to do from the Great Depression. But in that moment, they said they wanted their kids to have a better life than they did, but they also removed the one thing that made them the greatest generation, that grit, that determination. And so now I've reframed every time I say that, or I'm thinking it, or I pause and I get lost in that thought. I was like, I don't want my kids to have a better life. I want my kids to be more capable in life. And capability isn't something you buy. It's something you experience. So by using the word capability, it gives me a boundary that it's not something that it's a stack of toys in the basement that they don't play with, which gets lost in the, I want my kids to have a better life, which means more toys and more things and more Xbox. But capability is experiences, wit, wisdom, life lessons, mentorship. Like, capability will determine who they become and what their identity looks like, more than having that experiential of having all the extra things that we think of when we think of money and better, which is the American general way that we sell that.
Oh yeah. Amen. Matter of fact, our family motto is to buy them experiences and memories, not stuff. So one of the biggest things that we do, and one, because, you know, I've had a great career in a position. We bought a rustic cabin here in Colorado with 40 acres out in the woods, backed up to public land for hundreds of acres. We'll take our kids and other people's kids out to our cabin. I mean, there's no electronics. There's just woods and dirt. We'll shoot guns, shoot archery, throw axes as, you know, an 10, 8-year-old. There's something uniquely human about giving them those experiences. And we'll go through 48 hours of just literally, I will hand them a shovel. And although that might sound very soldierish of me, three kids.
Only if it's an e-shovel or an e-tool.
It wasn't. Although I taught them how to go to the bathroom with an e-tool in the woods. But give them a shovel and said, hey, let's dig a trench. And I thought I was just joking. And the three of them loved life, being given a purpose like that. So I'm absolutely with you. And I mean, I view it, there's different words, like a richness to open them up to the world, but it doesn't have to be, you know, the fact that we're out at our cabin together, there's no distraction. I'm present. They're present in the moment. There's so much that we do out there that is literally the time that I'm the happiest. I call it my happy place. Go out there and just get dirty and work with the land. And I think as I look back at my own childhood, what it gives them differently is not what I didn't have. It's a memory that I didn't have for whatever reason.
You remind me of a conversation that I was just having with a listener. And I was telling him, and he had this exact path. He goes out into the woods, and he just loves life, and he struggles to love life when he's home. And what hits me there's a couple things when you go into the woods that I always try to highlight and magnify. One is, in the woods, life is abundant. It's everywhere. And you don't have to feel scarce about it, which living your life most every day, especially if you're going through a transition or anything like that, you feel like there's a lack of life. You feel like there's not enough time, there's not enough money, and there's just this closing of the walls in. But out in nature, it's abundant everywhere you look. And the other point that I want to highlight is, you're teaching your kids where to go find life, either through life of like nature, but also where to find and experience it, like within their life. Because that's also something we don't have as kids and adults, even more probably for adults, that because that's usually where most of our problems come from, is they don't have a path to go find life. And life is easiestly found in abundance of it in the woods, where you've got everything at multiple levels, from the trees all the way down to the soil. And to me, finding life is one of the tools that I always use to help men find, like, who am I? Because if you can find life, we can find a trail back to who are you?
Yeah, I agree with you. And I actually think that this is, again, the reason my book's called Connected Soldiers. There's reasons for it, but we're more connected now than we ever have been in history, but we're also more alone. So I take it, a real part of my job as a dad is to open their eyes. And we get kind of busy even in little kids' lives of, okay, I'm going to go to school, I'm going to come home, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this activity. When we go out to the woods, or, you know, of course, we live in Colorado, so we do a lot of hiking. It's literally taking their blinders off and opening them up to the world. Same thing if we do a lot of traveling, you know, local, you know, like driving to New Mexico and things like that. We're just opening their worlds. And I think that's one of our, to me, it's one of you, as a military guy, it's one of my duties and responsibilities as a father, is to make sure they don't get their blinders on all the time and take any opportunity to open up their eyes to the world around them or life in general.
So if you're a longtime listener, you know what you just said, John, is exactly what I've been talking about, because we just hit it on width, that our objective as kids, and this is why I love military dads, this is why this podcast is one of my core things that I love the most, is because we have something that only 7% of the population has. And if we can gift even a small percentage of that, our kids will have a leg up on wisdom, depth, understanding how the world works, empathy, and width of what you just said. And you kids can't figure out what they want to be in 12 years of school. And I often phrase this as, you need to get kids out of their life in order to get them into their life. And most people just run them through the machine and wonder why they rubber band back to their basement, when in reality, you never exposed them to a life that they felt like they could step into. And I love how you're doing that. So congrats on that, because that is not something that is commonly shared out there in the mainstream anything.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, because we compared my military career to like the high and low moments when I allowed myself to over identify with something more than, you know, a variety of things, because life is huge. And you can identify with so many things, and whether it's hobbies or purpose or meaning. I can watch especially my oldest child, really, in the Pentagon, when I worked there, we call it the soccer ball, right? When there's a problem, everybody's bouncing around the same soccer ball, where he'll just narrowly focus. So right now it's UNC basketball, because mom went to UNC. So he watched the tournament and he's like, I'm going to play for UNC. Like, okay, that's great. You got to work hard if you want that. But and when I joined the military at 17, I wasn't fully developed. So I could feel him being drawn into like one thing. And I think it's like, okay, great. And that's why we expose them to so much, because you got to have an open thing and guide them. Like you said, I'm almost a guide through life and in the military, we have that. We have like mentors and first line supervisors. And again, what we get that some people don't is all these guides and opportunities and experiences and highs and lows that are life. As I watched my oldest son really, you know, just start going in one direction, like, okay, that's great. If eventually that's where you go, but we're going to keep opening you up to other things.
One thing that I want to highlight, and I'm also curious, when we think of military experience, and a lot of what you talk about is leadership and teams and winning and success, But the one thing, and this is kind of some irony in our overall, I don't know, the BS we sell ourselves on the way out of the military, is we often don't realize the true, like, the gold in the stuff we know. So one question I was interested in, when you think and you look back just in the category of like leadership, leading yourself, leading your family, what was that one like tool that you didn't realize how effective and necessary it was that maybe others may not be utilizing in the same way?
So one tool, that's a tough one, man.
Or one that just became like clear, like I wasn't utilizing this, like I knew of it, but I didn't really understand how to wield it or utilize it. Or even a lesson within leadership that you maybe didn't fully understand how to apply it until life showed you a process of how to apply it or why it mattered.
So let me give you an example of an opportunity to use a lesson that I learned early in my career. And some people make fun of the Army's simplistic orders or whatever it is, whether you're drawing with a crayon and telling somebody how to do something. As I grew up, I went enlisted as a private, I just did what I was told. Then you transition to these other forms of leadership where eventually you learn that it doesn't matter what you say, it matters what you do. And there's nothing more powerful than that as a dad. It doesn't matter. It matters. Of course, I don't run a free house, but it doesn't matter what I tell them to do. It's they're watching everything I do. And well, but you just did this, that leadership by example is the greatest lesson. They don't really care what you say. They care what you do. And that was true in my military career as much as it is in fatherhood. And that, I get reminded of that all the time. They're always watching. Doesn't matter they're always watching. And that was the case when I transitioned from enlisted to being an officer too. As I made that transition from a Sergeant First Class to an officer, it's like, look, they're always watching. It's just part of leadership, and you have to understand that. But the one that's really come home really recently is the simplicity of instructions. And we kind of do that in the military. We know that we're doing it. But especially when I was a Ranger instructor at Ranger school, when somebody's under stress or whatever form of stress that is, they just can't receive information like you think they should or like they could. So, because of that early lessons of how, we call it Barney or, very simple instructions written very clearly, are more powerful than lots of other forms of what we call mission orders or all that stuff. We say these words, but I've had many opportunities and just recently in Ukraine everybody should know a lot of stuff, but when people are under extreme stress, to include even kids, they can only receive information that is very simple, beyond simple than people think. And in wards, it gets exposed even more so. So I was putting out for Ukraine some simple instructions in it. I mean, it's just amazing what went viral because as a leader, you have to understand the stresses that people are under and then understand how your instructions or your guidance, or even if it's for kids, your rules or your telling them what to do have to change based on knowing how somebody's stressed out.
There was a couple things that I wanted to point out. One, it hit me when you were talking about what they see. And you talked about in the context of like doing and being and within like what they can physically see you do. But there's also a massive gap for many military dads out there where kids are also learning what you prioritize. And if you prioritize work over family, that's not necessarily something that's going to maybe like create devastation, but they're going to learn how to behave when they get older. They're going to learn and apply that later. And they're going to apply that in their relationships, whether it be marriage or through whatever. That idea of prioritizing what they see and present, like even the idea I always like, one of my best advice is for military and marriage is your marriage is the longest commitment you will ever make in your entire life. If it doesn't have the most important priority on it, your priorities are wrong. Like you can literally sign up for anything. Nothing will last as long as your marriage, but we rarely ever prioritize that way. And even it was kind of boring and simply is like making sure you kiss your wife first, even before you kiss your kids, because show your kids that she's number one. I love you, but she's number one. And that prioritization is something they will see and then embody in their life. And it can, it's almost like this web that you could literally look at your life and see what you're prioritizing. And it reminds me of a story that you'll love this story, especially being from Colorado. It was like 2 years ago, there was a massive snow drift outside our house. And I'm just walking through the snow drifts really deep, probably like 2 feet. My daughter's right behind me, who's four. And all of a sudden I'm walking, she's following. And then she says this massive life advice. She's like, "Dad, I'm going to follow in the steps you make because it's easier." And I was like, boom. Like, if that is not exactly how kids work, and we don't even realize it, like, especially in snow, because you see the steps. We don't get that visibility in life. But they will follow the steps, not because it's even the right way or the bad way. It's just easier. It's less to figure out. They saw it, so they know it. And if they're lucky, they're conscious of it. If they're unlucky, it's a subconscious thought. And so much of that is what you just hit on there with. They're modeling, and even the instructions, you hit on this idea that, where I often reframe it, that kids have only been here on Earth for 5 or 10 years, however old they are. And then I ask whoever I'm talking to, how old are you? And then they say 40. Do you have life figured out? No. Do you have everything understood of how it's supposed to work? No. Well, why the fuck do we expect a five-year-old to have any behavior when they only have 5 years of experience, when us as adults are still fumbling on a daily basis? That even in itself allows you to slow down, take yourself less serious, and realize they don't know what they don't know.
Yeah. Before I even became a father, I always said, even in a disgruntled way, you don't tell me your priorities. I'll figure out your priorities on how you spend your time. Whether you're a general in the military or you're a parent, you can say one thing, but I'm going to judge based on how you spend your time. And I think what you mentioned there, it kind of hit home even recently. So my five-year-old daughter, youngest, said just a couple of days ago, "Why do I never see you kiss mommy?" So that hit home, as in your kids will tell you sometimes, and I have to listen to that. So, and this is about being a leader, and a leader of your family is listening to your, they're not my subordinates, of course, but in the military, listening to, as a father, listening to your kids, they will give you signs sometimes. And mine have, especially when my wife was deployed, they were giving me signals all the time on things they were struggling with or things that I was messing up. And hey, I have to be like, I'm not perfect either. I make mistakes and I have to listen. I'm sure you've done shows about even active listening, things like that, but I have to take that as, hey, I'm messing up a little bit. I got to do some course correction as the head of this family and make sure my kids show that I give my wife affection. Even when, I mean, I do, it's not that I don't, but clearly they haven't seen it enough.
Which also is incentive to do it more, which is not like it's something that's hard or it's negative. Like, so it's like, okay, I'll challenge accepted. And there was something else that you mentioned for active listening, and I haven't had this connection, but a conversation I was also having with someone, we were talking about how like the BS as a veteran can get really loud, especially if we're not vocalizing it with our mouth. If we just hold it all in, it gets to be in like an echo chamber in there. You cannot active listen if you're spending all your time trying to drown out your monkey mind. If that's your primary voice that you hear the loudest, you are flying by little breadcrumbs like what your daughter told you. And even a small one from my daughter told me as well. So now she's five, so she's getting even smarter. And we did some things for spring break, and they were fun. They cost some money. And she said, like, "Daddy, we're going to run out of money." And she said that because for the last year or two, since I lost my job in 2020, we haven't always had enough money. And so my answer is like, we don't have the money for that when they want to do something. She listened to that. She heard that. And she noticed we're doing it more. And she noticed, I'm worried we're not going to have enough money. Something as simple as that, even though my intention was neither bad nor good the entire time, it was just was, they interpreted it in a way that I could have flown right by that. Now I'm going to be more mindful and more active listening to it too, and try to talk about it, relate to it, but then also help her understand why things could be different this time.
Yeah, something you mentioned really hits home to me, and it's something I struggle with even to this day. Now that I've been a parent for about 10 years, is drowning out everything. I call it being present in the moment. And that can be, look, I pick my kid up from school and maybe I spend, if there's an after school activity, because we give our, you know, we want our children to have that exposure to other things like piano and, you know, kids sports and things like that. But maybe I spend an hour or two with them before it's time to start getting ready for dinner and then bed. I struggle daily with being present. Whether I have an interview coming up or whatever, I find in my mind that I'm in the moment with my children. They're telling me about school, whatever, but I'm thinking about something else. I really struggle with that aspect of being present and to do my role as a parent, because when I don't, I find myself missing things or just not being present, even though I'm there. So, you know, what do you call that, quality time or whatever? I really struggle. Maybe I have too many plates going, but being present in with my children and my wife. And me and my wife kind of have a system of kind of debriefing every day. And we have our time together as both full-time workers that we come together and we talk, we share stories. But, you know, we're really adamant, especially when the kids come home from school, not just asking like, how'd your day go? But there's actually a conversation that we have. And then trying to stay present in those conversations I still struggle with it.
So I warned you about the Irish penance, and I'm going to ask one because it just popped in my head. One of the hardest things, and I see it not just in the military, this is everywhere, Dad, is mostly in Western societies, is we've been stripped away from having permission to be dad. Was that ever a struggle? Because the military doesn't give us permission. It doesn't give a general order that you're allowed to have a certain amount of family time, because they give you the bullshit that if they wanted you to have something, they would have issued it. They never issued you a family and adopt this, we don't want to know about your problems. But then when you punch your wife in the face because you didn't deal with your anger, okay, now we have to get involved. How did you ever have that thought of like, you know what, I don't even like feel like I have permission to identify with this other identity?
Yeah, absolutely. And I didn't have my first child until I'd been in the military almost 16 years, I think. So I was about as military man as you could get on you're supposed to put the Army first. And then even though they'll say the words, but it's about how they spend their time. They expect you to be there at 5:30 in the morning.
It's not just a billboard. It actually has to show up when you need it.
Yeah. But I say that I used to call my firstborn the game changer. And just because of my own background of my dad leaving when I was young and my mom being not around, I know I wanted to be something different. But even when my wife was pregnant, I was struggling with, okay, how am I going to fit that into this other identity of putting 100% of myself into the Army, into my soldiers, into progressing forward. But the moment my firstborn was, it literally changed everything, as in prioritizing my family over that. And then eventually it did come down to a decision of, because we were dual military, of, hey, this aspect of somebody else raising our kids while we do what the Army is saying is required isn't working for us. And I was just in a place where I could say, okay, I'm not going to go live away from my family, which is what the order was. It just wasn't going to happen. So I was just luckily in a place saying, okay, at this moment it's time to put dad as my number one priority. But I absolutely struggled with that. I didn't struggle with it. It was a conflicting conflict.
I mean, it's our core purpose as men is to go out and build, conquer, and provide. What you just said like goes against that equation. Did you eventually move into like a short time stay at home dad role where like you were the primary person that kept the kids alive?
That's what I do now. So my wife is active duty military. She's deployed.
And you get to spend all your free time doing all these amazing hobbies and just take care of the kids.
Yeah. I still have a full-time job working as a researcher and an author for the Army, but now there's nothing that'll take priority over. I mean, you know, like the sick kid for us in the military was always like the death sentence. Like, okay.
Then the worst conversation to navigate too. Like who's going to be the one that has their day grenaded?
That's right. For a daycare kid who gets sick every 2 weeks or so and can't go back for 48 hours. That stress was huge. And now I'm in a position where I can tell work to, hey, bug off. I'm not available for the next 2 days.
I often wish I could start a retirement revolution where men would realize that this retirement is a transition into paying back the time credit card from family and like let your wife go out in the world and see who she can become. Like, just pause. You do not need to go find more. Just stop, break, and just be dad. Especially, I mean, 20 years, you've got the pension, you've got semi-umbrella, and your wife most likely is already itching to go out into the world and turn something on and see what she can do, because she's been holding it together for 20 years. Like, let that happen and enjoy those moments, because there is, this is one of my favorite like stories about reality, but then also where fatherhood does not look sexy. I was on a podcast interview and my daughter, she was home in the morning and then preschool in the afternoon, and she was sick. She had puked like 4 times by like 9 a.m. And it was one of those days, like, it would have been devastating. Then it was, and I was on my second kid. The first kid had already gone through the stomach flu, and now I was on the second one. And I was on the interview. She's out there just kind of relaxing and sleeping. And then all of a sudden she's like, "Daddy, I'm going to puke." And I was like, hold that thought in the interview. And I go out, and in that moment, I had to hold my daughter's hair in the toilet. And I was just like, that's what fatherhood looks like today. And I owned it and loved it because I was there. I was able to be there. And in that moment, this is talking about being present. That's who she needed me to be. She didn't mean to have the best idea. She didn't mean to provide money. She needed me to be there to hold her hand so she wouldn't feel scared and that she could get through this being sick that day. And to me, that that juice that you can get from those kind of squeezes will far outweigh. And we're both still in the R&D lab of how this will all play out when our kids are older. But I'm confident when I'm looking back at 50, I'll be able to see a puzzle that was being put together that hopefully is like a Grand Canyon style Picasso of just beauty, depth, being carved out, and be like, man, I didn't know what I was doing, but man, intentionally, it all ended up in the right spot.
Yeah, actually, what you made me think of is, you know, people think of adversity as a bad thing, but like I talked about in the beginning, life will sometimes smack you in the face and you come out different and you come out stronger. You can come out stronger, and they call it post-traumatic growth. So my wife got cancer about 5 years ago, breast cancer. And it was really like God smacking you in the face. It made us, it forced us to realize what mattered in life. So no job mattered at that moment. Nothing mattered about other than her survival, her role as my wife, as mom. And that it, not everybody gets that opportunity to be smacked in the face and realize what should be the top thing that care that matters to you in life. And that moment of her and then her survive, you know, basically going through a full dual mastectomy, radiation, all of it, then coming out of that stronger. I hope that gives our kids a lesson of that life will knock you down. And my wife has been adamant. So she's providing the biggest leadership lessons in our family, refusing to let people tell her no, coming out of cancer, going back into the military, deploying when they say she couldn't. We're one, not thankful that she got cancer. Of course, cancer sucks. It can go fuck itself, screw itself. But
I've already broke the seal. I've already sworn and dropped the F-bomb. So yeah. Feel free to add it in there.
But to show the strength of when life hits you, it doesn't mean you stop anything. You actually can come out stronger. And I think she came out stronger. I hope, like you said, we don't know till later. I hope that it means that our kids came out stronger, watching mom face that adversity and the family, and to come out of it stronger. So you can be in a very low spot. It doesn't mean that you give up anything. You prioritize what matters, and then you can come out of it stronger. And hopefully that's the lesson that we gave our kids.
Two things kind of come out of that. I'm always referencing Lieutenant Dan at the top of the ship screaming at God in the middle of a storm. And then the story would go that he finds his peace on the other side, because like life doesn't stop bringing you hurricanes, but it's your excitement. Like, this is all you got, like, because then you grow through it. It's almost like, well, yes, cancer does suck, but it is a massive opportunity like to grow. And there will be a point in her future where she looks back like, she won't like it sucked, but she won't be imagining her life without that trial. And there's another frame that I also think about, or I'm always trying to bake into things that I talk about my kids, is trying to exemplify we don't give up on family just because someone's down. Like, it's not like when life gets hard, you're out. And I feel like a lot of military men, with the divorce rate being so high, it's like whatever the cancer is, whatever the issue is in the marriage. And you know what? Like 50% of people can't be wrong. I'll just jump on that bandwagon. No, like it means that you dive in and go in and see what's going on. And while it may suck to go into the heart of the storm, rainbows only come on the other side of a storm. They don't show up without the storm. They come on the other side. And we have to almost invite and go through those storms, going back to who you are, identity. Those are storms inside of us that there is peace on the other side. There is a rainbow. But it's a, to quote Ryan Holiday, the obstacle is the way. And stoicism, it's going through the suck that will get you to where you want to go.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, it's a family. Your family is a tribe. We actually have something that we say, and it's very short to us, and it means something to us whenever we face a major life change, to include when we realized what it was, is that we basically just say Team Spencer, which means that we fight everything as a family. And that's our power. That's our superpower, that it means something. It has much of a meaning to us, but we tell it to our kids. And whether it's just moving completely from, which we will next year, you know, we'll pack everything up, we'll move because the military tells us to. But we have this saying, it's just when we just say Team Spencer, which means as a team, we're stronger.
And realizing that in each moment, when you say that almost, you're inviting like, God, is this really all you got? Because we've got a team here and we can handle it. And like, it also combats this feeling that can happen to like teenagers where they self-isolate and the thoughts of like, I'm alone, that, I mean, the irony in the military is we all know what it feels like to be a part of a team, but we're never told why. And so then we're never told to go recreate it, which then leads to our demise because we self-isolate, we keep our thoughts to ourselves, and we don't know what to go look for. And what Sebastian talked about in Tribe is we need that. It's biologically wired into us for millennia. And the military is really good at giving it to you, but they don't tell you that you need it. They don't tell you to go recreate it. And if we did that, man, if we could just, it would alleviate so much of the guesswork. It was like, oh, I need to recreate this as step one. Don't worry about a job. I would almost prioritize find your tribe and then find a job, because you can get a job anytime. May not seem like that. It may seem easy for me to say that, but if I wish I could gone back and done anything different, I wish I would have taken like a year off from getting out. I mean, I was unemployed for 2 weeks. That was not enough time for me to even realize what I wanted to do or realize how life is different. I just went right back to the same thing. I copied and pasted a job from one job to the next. And it took me 10 years to figure out and wake up in my story. And man, 1 year, 6 months, whatever it would have been, that community would have, I mean, I would have got 10 years back and I don't even know where I would be if I would have started that journey then.
Yeah, amen. I mean, I couldn't say it better. I mean, Tribe is a great book, but it has this meaning. And for me, it's Tammy Spencer. But like I said, even when I go meet with just a random group of civilians that are now like brothers and sisters to me, because we work out together every day, but it's literally going to meeting with my other tribe, and I can have more than one, right? I agree with you that a lot of people go down a dark path and think that they're alone in life and in the world, even if they don't have a family. The military teaches you that family has a bunch of meanings, right? So I have a huge military family, from brothers I served with, for brothers and sisters, just 2 years or just a year. And there are aspects of it, you know, basically how do you bond with somebody and create that life bond? Sometimes it's by blood. Sometimes it's by experience. Sometimes it's just by spending a crap ton of time together and talking to each other. It's about finding a tribe, and you can have more than one.
And to put a nice bow on this whole thing, right, as you were saying that, I'm reminded was right behind over your shoulder is the connected soldier, which is essentially two words that gift wraps the last 15 minutes. And realizing that in all the transition and through your continuation of life, if you're not connected, you're disconnected. If you're disconnected, you're one stone throw away from losing your mind. And that's a sliding scale of losing your mind. And connected is that word that we've never been more connected. That's the irony of our digital age. We're really connected, but yet extremely disconnected. So what was your point where you're like, this is something I need to put into writing? And then where can people go ahead and find the Connected Soldier book?
So the reason I wrote this book was because I saw, just because I was able to be in the military a long time, the military isn't a closed environment. Of course, it changes with life. And as we all became, as virtual connections became a part of our our being, our social networks, everything, it impacted the military. And I saw that through different combat deployments. And it has both a huge positive and a huge negative, to include when my wife went away to deploy, what it did to our family, seeing her face on a FaceTime or sitting her in a chair on Christmas morning and what the kids opening up presents in front of this virtual face. It has both positives and negatives, but that's life and it's not going to change. So that's what the book is about these nuances of even staying connected to people that are your family that could be, you know, this, it could be somebody you didn't see for 20 years. And all of a sudden now you can be connected virtually. Although I'm a big believer in there's a difference between virtual connection and physical connection.
Oh yeah. I'm so desperate for in real life. Like anytime I get it, I'm like,
I think
I'm like Homer in a donut. Right?
Yeah. COVID really woke up the world on, hey, look, yeah, we can do a short-term virtual thing. But it's a part of who we are. It's our literally biology. We respond differently to physical presence. So the book's available. It's been available for a while on the pre-order at Amazon. It officially comes out on July 1st, but you can go and get either the paperback or the audiobook now. And I'm really excited about it.
Well, I appreciate coming on today, John. And man, we cover some good things. And probably reading your bio, prepping for this interview, we probably one of the things that you normally don't get to talk about, which is often usually the best kind of interviews for people like you, because you're like, refreshing. People don't want the normal stuff that you've been getting. And it's also to acknowledge what a lot of men don't get to do when they do this other type of work, is they get to talk about the most exciting part that lights them up, that this is where the most juice, this is my why here. All the other actions is gravy, and it's just, it looks nice and it's really good and I can do that. But what we talked about today is what really matters. And again, even our legacy being, everything we talked about is like, I often always try to reframe what military members get wrong is like, what you do here is important, but what you leave behind is 10 times more important. And it doesn't happen by accident. And you're only forgotten as a veteran when no one remembers your name. So if you want to be remembered, make sure your kids understand who you are. Make sure they understand your stories. Make sure they understand what you learned. And if you share who you are with your kids, it'll be 100 years later when there's a story from grandpa that was shared. And it still is this life story that's passed on. And it's living well beyond your time here on Earth.
Yeah, amen to that.
Well, thank you, John, for coming on today. And I look forward to this friendship because I'm positive it's just getting started.
Yeah, thanks, Ben. Thanks so much.
Wow. Did you guys hang on? That was an amazing episode. And I hope that you got out of it as much as I did, because even as a man who's sitting on the other side of this microphone for 162 episodes, that episode really still hit me right in the feels. And really for that funeral line that he mentioned, where it was actually this death, and even as a connection, and I'm recording this big takeaway, I don't think we realize the choice and the idea of what actually is dying when we choose to get out, whether it be at a retirement or whether we're just finishing a 4-year enlistment. It's still a decision that closes off all their chances of opportunity to come through. It still closes off anything else from coming through that door. And I think what I opened up with, this idea of deciding, what are you going to decide today? And even as I prep for this interview, I've had a lot of different things come in my life. I recently did an 8K, never done an 8K in my life, didn't want to do it. And it was actually one of those things where it was raining, it was cold, it was 50 degrees. And on my way up, I had about a 40-minute drive to get there. And I'm like, you know what? I have 1,000 reasons I should not be here. I should just quit. I should go back. I should decide not to go. I wanted to text my friend that I was doing it with, like, you know what? I'm out today. I'm not going to be there. But I went and I made the easy choice, die. And I think that was a lesson that I've learned. And also, I think as I use this new frame of reference, it's going to help me realize that when you have two choices in front of you, having the mindset of what's the easier one and letting the easier one die. I understand and know that the hard roads are the ones that take you where you want to go. I understand Stoicism says that it's going, the obstacle is the way. But we often don't just think about like letting the easy choice die. I mean, there is maybe a time where the easy choice should win. But in this case, just that whole idea of understanding and recognizing the feeling, I hope that maybe even he gave you vocabulary that helped you understand that going through your transition and what you're trying to figure out, what you're trying to understand. This idea of letting go and letting that one choice die. Man, that's a hard choice. And it just kind of frames and undercuts every choice that you make. Even recording this right now, I'm thinking in my head of all the choices that I've let die, the ones I regret, the ones I didn't, all of them. All of them have led me somewhere. And realizing the purpose, the power in all of those, and then also the power in the future to continue to change where I am at by changing to let the easy choice die, and understanding that in a way that I didn't before. So John, if you're listening to this, thank you for this interview, and thank you for listening to this interview. If you got feedback out of this, if you got anything out of this, the one thing that I could ask is that you share the podcast. You guys are already sharing the Platinum series. I know, because there's downloads that are way off the charts on anything that we normally get. So if you got value out of this, or if you got value out of the deployment series, it would be from the bottom of my heart appreciative and welcome to get this message out to more people. Because this episode about retirement, think of how many people go through retirement and struggle with these feelings, but don't have the words to put to them. That's what this episode did. So please share it with someone that you know is going through a new deployment, a recent deployment, or considering it in their near future. Guys, that is all I have for you today. We'll be back for another interview. Really great episode next week about raising daughters. Another one that hits right in the feels of things we talk about every day. So look forward to that. Other than that, have an amazing week, and we'll be back again to talk to you on Monday.